This is 89.1 WEMU and I'm David Fair, and I'd like you to pause for just a moment. Imagine this. Every day when you wake up, you're forced to wonder if this will be the day the person you fell in love with is going to kill you or have you killed. Imagine then that the system of protections designed to protect you does more to help the abuser. Like countless others, that is the life of Nicole Beverly. She's had to live that life for far too long, even when her ex-husband was already in jail. On a number of occasions, her ex tried to hire hitmen to kill the Ypsilanti Township woman and the children they share. Through all of the stress and worry, Nicole has found her voice and found her strength. She's become a leading advocate for survivors of domestic abuse and for enactment of greater protections for women. Nicole has been sharing her struggles and successes with us at WEMU in hopes of making a difference for others. And with some new developments, we continue that conversation today. And welcome back, Nicole.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Well, last week you once again had to confront the prospect of being in the same place at the same time with your ex-husband. Fortunately for you, it was in a Washtenaw County courtroom where he was being sentenced for crimes committed against you while he was already in jail. Can you kind of take us back for a moment and describe the emotion of that moment awaiting the judge's decision?
It was actually a pretty packed courtroom, so we had to wait for quite a few other cases to be called before ours. So just sitting with the anxiety of not knowing what type of sentencing we were looking at, because in reality, it could have been a pretty low sentence that was given, and that wouldn't have given me much time to plan to relocate, for my son to graduate from high school. So just waiting for someone who has that much power over your life with one, what seems like a small decision, is just, it's very anxiety-provoking.
Well, the judge ultimately sentenced Kevin Beverly to 13 to 35 years in prison, and that 13 years is a minimum. That gives you at least 13 years. When you heard that, thinking it might be a lighter sentence, what was your immediate reaction?
I would say I breathed a sigh of relief when I heard her say the 13 was the minimum, because that means that my son can graduate from Lincoln High School, which was one of my biggest goals, you know, and hopes that he would be able to graduate from the school he's at. He'll be going into ninth grade next year, but to be able to stay with his friends and in the community that has given us so much support is a huge relief.
Despite the relief, a sense of safety or security remains somewhat elusive. As you have kind of hinted at, Kevin Beverly has already tried to have you and your children killed from jail, and there's no guarantee he won't try that again, even though he's behind those bars.
Absolutely. And I fully anticipate that he is going to be even angrier and more upset with me now because he was so close to being released. You know, his maximum sentencing date was in October. And I think he's going to be more upset than ever now that that didn't happen. And, of course, I'm going to continue to have concerns that he may continue to try to hire somebody. It may take some time before he's comfortable trying that again, knowing that eyes may be on him now. But I would not put that past the realm of possibility that he may attempt that again.
We're talking with domestic violence survivor and advocate Nicole Beverly on 89.1 WEMU, and we're in the midst of what will be an ongoing conversation about intimate partner abuse and the need for more and better protections for victims and survivors. To hear our previous discussions, I encourage you to visit our archive at WEMU.org. Now, Nicole, you keep making the point that there is no real safety, and even if he serves the entirety of the 35-year sentence, at some point when he gets out, if the protections are as they stand today, you will have to relocate because you are not safe. You've been lobbying state lawmakers to enact laws that would better protect victims and survivors. Republican Senator Margaret O'Brien has sponsored a package of bills now that would allow victims of sexual assault, stalking, and domestic violence to keep addresses secret in order to better stay safe. And she said publicly that the legislation was drafted as a direct result of your situation. You had conversations with Senator O'Brien?
Yes, I have. And she's been, you know, wonderful in listening to my concerns. Of course, not just for myself, but for so many victims and survivors in our state, that the need for this address confidentiality program was great.
The package now moves on to the State House for consideration and has a good chance of becoming a law. Once again, you're listening to 89.1 WEMU, and we're talking with domestic violence survivor and policy reform advocate Nicole Beverly. And Nicole, even if those measures do become law, they are reactive measures. after-the-fact protections. I know you're also focused on the other side of things, domestic violence prevention through education in particular. How important is it to you to get into the public schools and take your message and talk to the young men and women?
I would say that that is of the greatest importance to me, because I really feel like everything else we do is in response. And what we need to do is we need to get ahead of the situation, and we need to teach our students at the high school level and early college levels what signs to look out for so that they can avoid these abusive individuals and get out of these abusive relationships sooner so that they don't end up walking in my shoes. It's the only way that we can prevent domestic violence from continuing to happen. I think it's our best strategy.
Have you come up with a program that the schools are interested in putting forth to students?
I've presented at Lincoln High School. I've presented at Ypsilanti Community High School. And I've also presented to the African Student Organization at Eastern. And the response that I've gotten to those presentations has been great in terms of feedback from students and students reaching out to me after the fact to tell me that it has impacted them and that they've actually left relationships or recognized red flags early on enough to get out of those relationships. Now that I know that I'm going to have some more time here in the state, mm-hmm. I would love to expand my presentations to get into as many schools and programs as possible. It's just now figuring out how to make this work.
And that will be a work in progress as we start to move forward. I want to talk to you about another aspect of the prevention and the response that happens when an incident of domestic violence occurs. Are you finding that law enforcement needs some better kind of policy and training in order to respond appropriately when a woman calls and asks for help?
From personal experience, I would say that it would be a wonderful thing for law enforcement to receive more training and better ways of responding to domestic violence calls. As I think I've shared before, I called the police myself 13 times, 911, during the stalking events that were happening over that 2.5 year period, and there were only 2 arrests made out of those 13 911 calls.
And response times were slow at times as well.
At times, yes. At times, I waited 2 hours to file a police report.
And in 2 hours, there are a lot of women who lose their lives.
Absolutely. And there are several states who are using lethality assessment protocol. 2 of those are Maryland and Connecticut, and they're seeing great success.
And how does that protocol work?
So with the lethality assessments, when police are responding to a domestic violence call, there is a structured set of questions that they're asking victims, and those questions are designed to assess the risk that the victim is of being murdered by their abuser. And it's a series of 11 questions, at least most of them. A few of the states are slightly different, but it's a series of questions that every victim is asked, and a rating is given in terms of the risk that they're at for being murdered. The police then take that level of risk, and they meet a certain percentage, they're immediately connected with a domestic violence organization, shelter that they can receive help from. And police also are using the assessments to help make decisions and how to move forward with those calls.
And of course, that could also help once we get to a level of court cases and prosecutions for the abuser, too.
Yes, ideally, the assessments would be attached to the police reports and then would be looked at by the prosecutor when they're making decisions on whether or not to move forward with charges, and also to the judge when they're deciding what bail should be set at.
Well, you mentioned Maryland and Connecticut are using these to a good deal of success. Have you had conversations with local Washtenaw County law enforcement or state law enforcement, and are you getting any response to proposing this kind of methodology?
Yeah, so I've met with Sheriff Clayton, and we've been talking about the idea in Washtenaw County, which I would be thrilled if that happened. They are looking at it as a department to see if they are going to move forward with a pilot program and see if we would see the same effectiveness that they've seen in these other states. And I should mention another benefit that the organizations, the departments that are using these assessments are seeing is that when the victim is asked these questions and they're forced to really think about their level of risk. They're seeing that the victims are then leaving sooner once they understand fully how high of a risk they are for being killed.
How much of that is because all too often that victims and survivors of domestic violence are living almost silently, that they live inside their heads and they can talk themselves in and out of situations. But once they hear it out loud and it becomes exposed, that it becomes real and it becomes something that has to be addressed.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely true. And sometimes, you know, for so long, for me, myself, I didn't tell anyone what was happening in my home for a very long time. Even after the incident, you know, where I had a gun held to my head, it was 4 months before I told anyone. And I was living in my head, and it was a horrible place to be. But once I finally was able to verbalize what was happening and tell someone else and get that affirmation that, yes, you know, you are at risk and, yes, you need to get out of this situation, I think it's tremendously helpful. And then for someone to be connected with the resources and support that they need is even better, because then they have somewhere to go or connections that are in place then to help them leave this abusive relationship.
Throughout your journey since that time, you've developed a network of fellow survivors and advocates. Can you parlay that connection with these women from around the country into meaningful reform at perhaps even the federal level?
Absolutely. You know, our goal, and we've been talking, a few of us in particular that are very active in the advocacy work and trying to affect change through policy, of what we need to do to start making changes at the federal level.
And what would be the top couple of priorities?
The creation of a domestic violence registry. So very similar to the sex offender registry. You know, people will always say, why didn't you look them up? You know, why didn't you do a background check? Why didn't you look them up on the Michigan Department of Corrections website? And the fact is, if it's a misdemeanor, even if someone has multiple misdemeanor domestic violence convictions, it is not going to show up. It is not going to appear. And then two of the other areas that we've, you know, really decided we would love to focus on are funding for that education piece in high schools nationwide, and also emergency housing for victims of domestic violence, because at this point they are not a priority in terms of housing.
There is a lot of work ahead, and you seemed quite determined to make sure that the work gets accomplished, and you are now creating a network of people that will help toward that. And so we're going to continue following along and continue to invite you back to talk about the challenges and the successes you incur.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate the opportunity.
That is Nicole Beverly, and she is from Ypsilanti Township, a domestic violence survivor, a policy reform advocate, and she will be a recurring guest on WEMU as we follow her personal journey and the road to public solutions to the crisis that is domestic violence. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti.